talking about? What you talking about? What you talking about? What you talking about? What you talking about?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Max Boxing Radio. I am Corey Erdman alongside Steve Kim. And Steve, no 18-month layoff here, just a couple of weeks.
You know what? In the immortal words of one James Todd Smith, LL Cool J, folks, you could actually call this a comeback. We are back as promised. We said late September, early October, and folks, we delivered.
Yeah, and just to fill in anyone who didn't know what went on, our show was previously on the Score on Sirius 158. The plug was pulled basically on the Sirius station from the Score, so all of its products and all the people sort of got shuffled around, and our show temporarily had no home, so we decided we were just going to bring it to you on our own. I think that there's too much in the world of boxing to talk about, Steve, without having an outlet to do it, and I don't just mean writing. There are certain things that you want to just put your voice on.
Right, and so basically we got super sixth. We got postponed,
yeah.
But not necessarily canceled. And for all the readers out there and all the listeners that wanted information, that emailed me and Corey, tweeted at us, first of all, thank you for the support. We really appreciate it. And it's a funny story. The week before we basically got canceled, I had called Corey in an excited manner saying, we got so much to talk about. He said, Steve, I got to tell you. I said, no, we should do this, and I want to discuss this. And Corey, you just basically said something to me that really was funny to me and sad at this. He said, Steve, we got a problem with the show. I said, what, we can't tape it tomorrow? No, we're not going to tape it tomorrow or the next day or for a little while. I said, what happened? No studio? And you basically said, no radio station. And so that's kind of a big technical problem that we had to work out, but folks, we are back.
We are back, and I am still employed. Anyone that follows me on Twitter knows that I stayed with the Score, so no harsh words at all for the Score. These things happen in business, but yeah. As you mentioned, we were just postponed a little bit, Steve. So anyone who previously subscribed to our podcast gets 30% off our current podcast. Is that how it works in boxing now, Steve?
That is a perfect segue. And if you're a policeman or a firefighter, or if you buy $20 worth of Everlast apparel at Modell's, you also get a discount to Max Boxing Radio.
By the way, and of course we're referring to Sergio Martinez and Darren Barker and the difficulties that they're having with selling tickets in that fight, of course, coming up on Saturday. That's a pretty damn good deal. If I were a fan who wanted to pay to go see this fight, I'd definitely buy an Everlast T-shirt to get two free tickets. Why not?
Well, here's the thing about that fight. The problem is Darren Barker is not well-known. I mean, there's a reason why he's about a, 15 to 20 to 1 underdog on the sports book that deal with these issues for entertainment purposes only, of course. And I think that Martinez is certainly one of the best fighters in the world. If you make a list of pound for pound, if you care about that stuff and take it seriously, I don't think there's any way you can't have him in your top three or four. However, with that being said, this fight is very lopsided. I've seen Darren Barker's last four or five fights. I'm not saying he's Patrick Charpentier. I'm not saying he's Ricky Frazier or one of these really bad mismandatories that HBO was stuck with for years with Roy Jones and the like. But I don't feel as though he's a serious threat to Sergio Martinez. And I think Martinez is in a bit of a conundrum, Corey, because to paraphrase one of my favorite quotes from Rick Pitino, Caveman Lee, Wilford Scipion, John Mugabe, they ain't walking through that door. And the problem with Martinez being the undisputed, because he really is the undisputed middleweight champion of the world, is that there really aren't any solid contenders right now. And anyone that's halfway marketable, like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., is being absolutely kept at arm's length away. So I really believe Martinez is between a rock and a hard place, and I've had conversations with Lou DiBello about this. Corey, I know that the HBO money is very enticing, but if their whole game plan is to go on HBO twice a year and then call out the big names, Corey, that's where they're going to be stuck, in half-empty ballrooms in cities like Atlantic City.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't know what the other route is. And you know, everything you mentioned there, Steve, it's sort of like the reaction over the past 2 weeks in the way that the fight is being reported on and everyone on Twitter and whatnot, it's sort of kicking everyone involved in this promotion kind of while they're down. Because, Steve, I could have told you when they made this fight that this is not going to sell more than 2,000 tickets in Atlantic City. And I'm sure if you talked to Lou DiBella off the record, he probably would have told you the same thing, because this just isn't what is going to be a competitive fight. And it isn't a fight that features anyone who is currently marketable in the United States. And that's not Sergio's problem. It's not Darren Barker's problem. He's one of five people who were offered the fight, and he was the only one who took it. I don't blame anyone involved in this situation. And also, I just don't know what else could be done right now, because if you're Sergio Martinez, you've essentially accomplished everything you can without fighting Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather, or I'll throw Miguel Cotto in there, because in terms of exposure, if you fight him, I guess you get on a different level in terms of stardom. But without doing those three things, there's not much else he can do. And short of doing those three things, what else can you do except fight in empty ballrooms on HBO? Because that is still more profitable for your fighter, if you're Lou DiBella, than sending him back home to Argentina, where he could fight in front of a whole bunch of people, but probably for less money. It's just, the criticism is kind of moot at this point, because I don't know what else they could be doing.
Well, Corey, I've made this point to Lou DiBella and Samson Lekowitz. They actually had a press conference. I believe it was the week after they knocked out Paul Williams. It was one of those fights in Las Vegas. I believe it was the Marquez Katsidis weekend, Thanksgiving weekend of 2010. And the writing was high, and you understood where this was going, that he was one of those guys like Marvin Hagler. He was southpaw, and he was too dangerous for his own good. And I said to those guys, will you try to get a third and fourth fight away from HBO? Because that's the pattern now. That is the template that's set, Corey. If you are a world-class fighter, you either A, fight on HBO pay-per-view or another Showtime outlet, or you basically sit for months at a time. And I believe that while they certainly deserve the two HBO fights, they have not done enough on their own end to create a market for themselves. And Bob Arum has been very adamant about this. I could go the easy way and just collect checks twice a year from HBO, but this track record has proven that he's willing to put on small pay-per-view shows, work off of a gate, and build foreign markets. And I really believe that coming into 2012, they're going to have to do that. That if you're going to fight on HBO twice, you're going to at least have to make a concerted effort, like a Marcos Maidana, if you want to stay busy and build another market, which I think is absolutely vital. Because unlike a Miguel Cotto or a Thomas Adamek, they don't have a national ethnicity that they could bank on in North America. That is the sad reality of it. And, you know, I've talked to Lou DiBella about this a couple of times throughout the week. I asked him, are you creating a market by giving away tickets and slashing, effectively, where people don't want to buy tickets at a full price? Because remember, Kathy Duva would not allow Hopkins Dawson in her arena in Newark because she felt as though that market was going to be contaminated. This is going to be an issue for Sergio Martinez. And, Corey, you know what's not going to help? That literally 100 miles away on each side, in Philadelphia and New York, the Major League Baseball playoffs are starting, and there's also a full slate of college football. So literally, Corey, this is a case where you may not be able to give tickets away.
Yeah, and it's Sergio's such an interesting study when it comes to promoting a fighter, though, Steve, too, because the way that they're doing it with Maidana, for example, as you mentioned, they'll get him fights that aren't on North American TV. They'll keep building him, and they've built markets around him, both as a TV fighter and in terms of a live gate in his hometown or in his home country. With Sergio, it's still a little bit different because of his age and because he might not want all these fights in the interim. So it's interesting. It's also interesting, you talked about Atlantic City as a market where people don't want to pay full price for tickets. In this case, I think that speaks to the quality of the fight or the perceived competitiveness of the fight, because Atlantic City, Las Vegas, those are your boxing cities where the sharp boxing fans are supposedly going to be. They're also destinations for those sharp boxing fans. And if they don't want to pay full price for the ticket, they have a million fights they could go to. And if they're not paying for this one, then you really know you have a problem with the fight on paper.
Well, you go to his age first. Let's just address that quickly. He is 36, 37 years old. He is not 27, 28. And I believe that there are some nagging physical injuries that are plaguing Sergio Martinez from what I'm told. Again, it's like in football. Are you injured or hurt? Obviously, he's going through with this fight, so there will be no excuses. But you're right. He's at that stage. He probably can't fight five times a year anymore. But you go back to what you mentioned about the boxing market. This is not unique to Sergio Martinez, a lack of ticket sales in a casino setting.
No.
If you look at Floyd Mayweather's last fight with Victor Ortiz, and I wrote about this for about a week or two, those tickets did not sell very well, and they had to paper the house a lot. Now, there were a lot of factors that are a little bit different. I think, number one, they overpriced the tickets for Mayweather-Ortiz, and also the whole brokering of tickets done by Golden Boy and Al Haymon, I think, really saturated the market, where even the brokers had to really dump tickets at the end. In this instance, I thought the tickets were priced very fairly. I think they've done everything they can to make sure that as many fans and working off volume can exist, but it simply is not working because this is thought of as a blowout. And I think, to me, Sergio Martinez is very interesting in a sense that here's a guy, he's not a boring fighter. He has the looks where he should be on the cover of GQ before Ring Magazine. He has some crossover appeal because you know the females like the guy, yet he still can't gain a foothold. And it proved once again, you can have a Latin surname in North America, Corey, but if you're not Puerto Rican on the East Coast or Mexican on the West Coast, that really is not a market that exists in this country, and it's going to be a problem. Corey, I got to tell you a funny story. Last week, I'm at the Margarito Cotto press conference, and after all the formalities had been through, all the reporters gathered around Miguel Cotto, and Miguel Cotto was asked, why are you fighting Antonio Margarito after you had made it clear that you thought he cheated and he doesn't deserve an opportunity to make any more money off your name? And Miguel Cotto explained, you know, if in this business, to make money for me, I have to fight a Margarito, I have to fight a Pacquiao, or a Floyd. And then finally, the notorious Ellie Seckback, who's a big Sergio Martinez guy, Corey, said, well, what about Sergio Martinez? I mean, and the funny thing is, he was almost behind Miguel. Miguel, who's about as monotone as a statue, whips around and gives him a child's please look, like, child's please. Are you kidding me? And he looks at Ellie for about a second. There's like this stony silence, and he says, you really believe that Sergio Martinez make me money? Yeah? So he had learned well from Bob Arum, and that's why I argue with people when they tell me, Steve, why do you focus so much on attendance, viewership, ratings, and all these ancillary issues when it really shouldn't matter? You know why I do, Corey? Because it does matter, because those factors determine whether or not you get the big fights against guys like Miguel Cotto, Manny Pacquiao, and to a certain degree, Floyd Mayweather.
Well, let's talk about the in-ring for this fight, and really there isn't too much to talk about, but in the ring, he is on the level with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather in a lot of people's opinions, and I mentioned that it isn't his fault, it isn't Darren Barker's fault that this fight isn't competitive, because that just happens to be the one that could have been made. Ultimately, when we're looking at this fight, put everything aside, there's nothing more we can say about this fight, but then this, again, this is the one that was made, so this is the one we're going to get on HBO on Saturday. I've watched Barker's last five fights, too. I watched him fight on even terms with Domenico Spada, and you know what the sad thing is here, Steve, is that Darren Barker isn't a bad fighter. He's also not a boring fighter, and I would give him a chance against the other names at middleweight. And you know what, Steve, tell me if I'm wrong, but you make any of these fights at middleweight with any of these other people that don't involve Sergio Martinez, and not only do you get a competitive fight, but you probably get an exciting fight. So you put Barker in there with P-Rogue, with Daniel Gill, with Gennady Golovkin, with Hassan Njikum, Chavez Jr., who if he decides to fight, he wins Bick, Marco Rubio. You match Barker with any of those guys, or even any of those guys together, you'll probably get some pretty good fights. It's just unfortunate that he has to go and get blown out on Saturday.
So in other words, it's the Klitschko syndrome.
It's exactly it's the same thing, except with no marketability up top.
Right. Darren Barker does have some physical attributes I think that could trouble Sergio Martinez. He's a tall, lanky guy with good length. And unlike Paul Williams, he does seem to be able to control distance much better than the Punisher. Darren Barker's never lost. That's also another factor. A lot of people will tell you that. But if you look at the guys he's faced leading into this, if Darren Barker was never chosen for this assignment, Corey, would you be saying to yourself, God, I wish Sergio Martinez would be facing come on down Barker?
No, of course not.
Right, and that's one of the issues you're going to have. Sergio Martinez is one of the best fighters in the world, and the thing that's going to have to happen is, he's going to have to look impressive. And I think he's also in a no-win situation, that if he wins and he doesn't look all that exciting or impressive, it's going to be considered a loss. And if he blows him out in three rounds, as Chris Rock once famously said, you did what you're supposed to. I just feel as though that Sergio Martinez, I don't know. I see. Here's the one thing I don't buy from his crew, led by Lou DiBella. And I talk to Lou a lot. We go back and forth. Lou says, look at the fights we've been fighting. Like, they make it sound like they've gone through murderer's rows, like the 27 Yankees, right? Like, he faced the Mount Rushmore of 160-pound contenders and challengers and titleists. And he says, we need a break. We need a respite. We need a fight where we get a little bit of a break here. Corey, in a system now where boxers fight once every 6-7 months, those 4 or 5 months when you're not doing anything and you get to rest, guess what, Corey? In my opinion, that's your break.
Yeah, seriously, that's your break.
When you fight twice a year, there should be an expectation. And essentially, if you're overpaid in terms of your market value, there should be an expectation that you fight someone thought to be a little bit more of a threat.
Yeah, and you know what? I like Lou DiBella a lot. I talked to Lou quite a bit myself, but this sounds... he's just making excuses for the fight. He's sort of going in circles here. It's the same thing he did before the Zinzurek fight, where he said, you know, we don't really want this fight. This fight's too dangerous. We can't market this. And then by fight week, it was all about how great this fight was and how he should be. That's sort of promoter speak. And I guess I can understand where he's coming from. But you mentioned the physical assets that Darren Barker has. I agree with you that he has the length, that he is a bigger middleweight. He might even be naturally bigger than what Sergio is. I just don't know that he has the fitness level, and not many fighters do, of Sergio. I don't think he can keep that kind of pace. Against Spada, he was fading late. His hands started to drop, and that's one of his problems that I've seen in all of his fights, that when he gets tired and he already doesn't hold his hands up, he doesn't tend to go in a shell all that often, those hands start creeping towards his belt line, and if Sergio sees that, he's going to see dead red. I think this fight ends pretty quickly if he starts doing that.
Well, the one thing about Barker that I noticed immediately, he does not have great physical strength. He's not a very fit guy. And while Sergio Martinez, in terms of his stature, is closer to a junior middleweight, I think the track record is proven at 160. He has a very, very strong set of legs. He moves well in and out, and he can bang. He has a very good overhand left. He's very tricky in setting it up. And that's what concerns me about Darren Barker. I think Darren Barker's foot speed and his ability to box, I think it's going to make it, I want to say competitive fight, but I don't think he's going to get blown out early. But one thing about Sergio Martinez, he is a long-distance runner with a very good level of physical fitness. Now, if these supposed nagging physical ailments don't get to him, I expect him to win a very, very wide decision, and then it's going to happen all over again, and I'm getting sick of it, to be honest with you, Corey. You're going to hear the same rhetoric from DiBella and Lekowitz, how nobody wants to face him, and guess what? This discussion over why is Sergio Martinez fighting X, Y, or Z, I guarantee you, Corey, as we look ahead and we flip the calendar to 2012, we will be having the exact same conversation as it relates to Martinez, should he be paired up with an Andy Lee who fights on this undercard, or guys like Matthew Macklin. And as you said, it's not all his fault, but I wish his people who represent him would be a little bit more proactive in terms of making him into a guy that actually has more options. That simply is not happening, in my opinion.
No, I agree with that. And I should add, too, that Darren Barker, unlike a lot of fighters today, Steve, he keeps his chin tucked. He actually tucks his chin. I was very surprised watching these fights. There aren't a lot of fighters who adhere to the fundamentals of the sport. Quickly, I do want to touch on the undercard, too, because I think that might be worth the price of admission and worth the 30% off as well. Certainly worth the Everlast shirt if you want to pick that up, or a pair of hand wraps. Brian Vera taking on Andy Lee in a rematch of what was a great fight on Friday Night Fights a couple of years back. I find it hard, though, to come up with a concrete reason as to why Andy Lee wouldn't win the rematch. I mean, looking at the fight and looking at how the fight was talked about, the first bout, Brian Vera was sort of tailor-made for Andy Lee, and he was very hittable with that sneaky right hook that Andy Lee has. It was just that Lee got himself caught and then was staggering around the ring for a couple rounds, and eventually he was staggering too much, and the ref called it off. But I don't know that I've seen enough improvement in Brian Vera. While I think that we now come to think of him as a better fighter than we did that day before he beat Andy Lee, I can't definitively say that he is that much better. I can probably say that Andy Lee has improved a bit since that fight. So I just don't know that if we fought that same fight that we did on Friday Night Fights a couple years ago 100 times, that Brian Vera would win the majority of them. And I don't know that I could ever pick him to win a decision against Andy Lee. So I'm finding it hard to pick Brian Vera in this fight, Steve.
You know, it's interesting. I did a story on the relationship between Andy Lee and Emmanuel Stewart, who are like ebony and ivory. This is like a father-son relationship that's very unusual. And they both admitted, coming into that fight in 2008, when that bandwagon was really gaining a lot of steam, and for full disclosure, I was on it, that they had no respect for Brian Vera. They thought it was going to be an easy fight. They thought it was an easy showcase on ESPN2. They barely watched any film. And they just felt as though Brian Vera was a strong guy that could be tamed easy. And it simply did not happen. And Andy Lee explained to me this was the first time in his life, especially as a professional prize fighter, Corey, that he actually hit somebody and they had the nerve and the temerity not to just fall over but to actually hit him back. And that took him aback. And that stunned him. Andy Lee has come up back through the hard road. He took a lot of fights off TV for low money, and then he had to kind of really dust himself off to come back to beat Craig McEwen. And Andy Lee, to me, I don't think will ever be as good as Emmanuel Stewart tells us he is. I think Emmanuel has a little blind faith, and he's certainly very biased towards his guy, which is understandable. But you're right. If you look at the tangibles, the physical tangibles that we could see that are very noticeable, size, length, reach, power, technique, those all go to the Irishman. But this game is also about intangibles at times, Corey, and if we look at toughness and grit, and maybe he's just a guy like Charles, like Iran Barkley, always had Thomas Hearns' number. Despite not having nearly enough talent as the hitman, he always found a way to beat him. I think Andy Lee wins this fight, but I certainly don't think it's easy, Corey.
Yeah, I just, to be fair, on the other side, Steve, as you mentioned, you mentioned that you don't think that that Andy Lee is as good as Emmanuel Stewart, and what I think that boils down to is I don't think that the skills that Andy Lee have, even specifically, are as good as Emmanuel Stewart says they are. I mean, for a while, when that Andy Lee bandwagon was picking up steam, we heard about this great jab that he has. And we found out that he really doesn't have it because he doesn't throw it. When he gets into trouble, he gets hit. He doesn't throw the jab out there. So I find it hard, if let's say I were picking Andy Lee, I still find it hard to justify him winning a decision because I don't think he's that good of a boxer. Brian Vera loses two fairly good boxers. I mean, with the exception of Sergio Mora, you know, guys like Isaac Rodriguez, Craig McEwen beat him a couple years ago as well. Those are guys that are going to beat Brian Vera, and I don't think that Andy Lee is as good of a boxer as they are. So, you know what? I think you can make a compelling case that if you boil this down to attrition, maybe the same thing happens again.
You know, the thing about Andy Lee, much of this reputation that Emmanuel Stewart talks about hasn't happened in real fights.
No, exactly.
Of course, it happened in the gym where he supposedly
mitts.
Gave Jermaine Taylor trouble. He supposedly has sparred with the Klitschko brothers. But that's a very controlled setting. I've seen a million sparring sessions where certain guys that you would think should handle another guy, it doesn't happen because they don't take it seriously. It's a different environment. You got 18-ounce gloves. You got headgear. There's a difference in weight or closeness of a fight has a lot to do with it. There's a lot of variables. And Andy Lee just may be a very good gym fighter. In those controlled atmospheres, that's where he may thrive. But when you start putting on 8 to 10-ounce gloves and no headgear and your chin or your lack of physical strength, because that's one thing I don't think Andy Lee has a lot of, is a lot of strength, because he does not control the center of the ring very well for a big, tall guy. If Brian Vera can overcome the early storm or the early rounds and not get picked apart, we could see a repeat of what took place a couple of years ago, but I think Andy Lee, here's what he is. Andy Lee is about as nice a young man, as amiable an individual as you'll ever meet. I don't think he'll ever be a great fighter, but you know what he is, as he proved in the McEwen fight and even the Vera loss? He's a good television fighter. He's the type of guy that he may never beat any middleweight champion of the world, okay? But what he'll do is he'll provide a good appetizer before the main entree because of his flaws and because of things he can do, which is punch a little bit with that left hand. That's what Andy Lee just might be, a very good opening round or opening bout type of guy on HBO who at the very top levels, his fundamental flaws, whatever they have, will eventually be exposed.
Yeah, but also, you know, those appetizers, that street food, Steve, that can sometimes sell more than the main courses can sometimes.
Well, what do you remember from March 12th? You remember Miguel Cotto taking out Ricardo Mayorga, but the best fight of that weekend was not that fight. It was not Zinzurk getting blown out by Sergio Martinez. It was Craig McEwen, Andy Lee.
Exactly. And Andy Lee, because of the Irish background, and if that Detroit market can ever be revived, he has a little bit of a background. He has markets that he could be marketed to, unlike other middleweights that we've been talking about.
Well, in talking to Lou DiBella, Corey, I think one of the things that they're going to do, or at least try to do, is Lou DiBella has recently signed Matthew Macklin. Now, Matthew Macklin will fight, I believe, in late November on a show that might be telecast by Epix. His initial plans, and obviously things can change based on the weekend, he wants to match Lee and Macklin in New York sometime around St. Paddy's Day, and attach that to Sergio Martinez. And I like that idea because that's been done before, that if the main attraction cannot really draw, stick him in with two guys that can and put it in their setting and let them eat off of that. And I think that might be the plan early next year.
And just hope they don't leave the arena kind of like they did.
You've seen that happen. Zolter
Yeah, I have, yeah. Zolter Dye's fans just had no interest in Frotch Johnson that night. Steve, let's talk about Juan Manuel Lopez and Mike Oliver. Speaking of fights that won't be competitive, Mike Oliver, I mean, he's been in some fairly exciting fights in the past. He had a pretty good fight against Al Seager a couple years ago, but really that's who he is able to fight and beat, is guys like Al Seager. I see Oliver getting run over, but at the same time, I just don't know after what we saw last time out. I certainly don't pick Wanma over Salido in the rematch, and you start to think about other guys in the division. There are a lot of them that I would pick over Wanma right now.
Yeah, you know, Mike Oliver, about 5 years ago, he came up, I think through Jimmy Birchfield out of the New England area,
yep,
thought of as a prospect. He was eventually exposed as a suspect. And Top Rank, as you and I know, Corey, they don't make a lot of mistakes. There's a reason why they chose him. As for Wanma, I'm actually doing a cover story on him tonight for the website. And they admit the Salido fight, they saw this coming, everyone around him. And I saw him months before that fight. He looked so heavy, and he was gallivanting around the globe during different things. He had marital strife. Now he's divorced. He says now that it's clear minds, he's focused, and all the other stuff, the ancillary issues have been cleared up. But even with that said, we saw him struggle at 122 against Rogers Mataguia, and the spin was he had problems making weight, he was dead on arrival, he had no legs. But then at 26, he fights Salido, and he gets run over with one right hand after another. So we've seen him get hurt. We've seen him get decked. We've seen him be stopped. So at that point, you say to yourself, this guy does have an Achilles heel. And you're right. If you look at the top end of the featherweight division from the guys you mentioned, Yuri Gamboa, if he stays there, Johnny Gonzalez, a young Mikey Garcia, streaking Orlando Salido, who I think is still getting better and more dangerous than ever, you're right about that, Corey. If you were an odds maker, who would you make a favorite over Wanma? Probably all of those guys. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, the only guy, I guess, maybe is Johnny Gonzalez, but he's had such a revival. But the only reason you might pick Wanma over Johnny is that you can't always rely upon Johnny Gonzalez to be totally sturdy, and maybe one of those early round blitzes gets to him. But you know, it's going to be tough. They're obviously going to have to be careful, and maybe you could shed some light on this, Steve, with the marketing of Lopez moving forward, because now that you've seen how vulnerable he is, at what point are you going to have to cash this kid out?
Here's the thing, which is very interesting about Wanma, and we talk about local ticket sellers and how much Martinez is struggling this weekend. As it relates to Wanma, with the job that Peter Rivera and Bob Arum have done, even against Mike Oliver, I expect a sizable crowd this week on the island, 8,000 to 10,000. It just goes to show you how vibrant that market is. In talking to Wanma and Bob Arum, they're saying after this fight, what they will pursue is the Salido rematch. Now, despite all the ancillary stuff that I talked about with Wanma, Corey, don't you just get the sense, even at his best, Orlando Salido would always give Wanma hell?
He's always going to, because I talk about sturdiness. He is a sturdy fighter, and I think that someone can stand up to just the physicality of Wanma Lopez, which is basically what he brings to the ring, because he's not a very good boxer, is going to give him trouble. Not to mention, Wanma has not met a right hand that he doesn't like. And that he doesn't want to eat. And that's why Rogers Mataagua, who, although he doesn't throw a picturesque right hand, throws right hands, was landing all night long. And it's the same with Salido. It doesn't even matter how you throw that right hand. It's going to land against Wanma. And if you're sturdy and you're physically strong like Orlando Salido, that's why I'm saying there. I am 100% picking Salido in the rematch. I have no doubt in my mind that the same thing happens.
Well, Corey, scoot over, because I'm right on that bandwagon.
Good.
I think Salido is for real. I think he's the Glenn Johnson 2.0 of Mexico.
He's your new favorite fighter, too,
boxing.
I heard.
Yeah, the best stat in boxing is that Orlando Salido, at only 30 years old, has still been a pro boxer for half his life. That can only happen from a boxer who originates from Mexico. But going back to Wanma, I think he's going to have to retool his style, and we've seen this before with Barrera. Guys who early on who blow through people, who can punch, who are exciting, then all of a sudden, remember what happened, Corey? He ran into a guy by the name of Junior Jones, and he got poisoned. And slowly but surely, he retooled his style, not necessarily to be safety first, but certainly more of a measured, controlled, calculating boxer that worked off his left jab more than his left hook. And he became that guy. Instead of a puncher-boxer, a boxer-puncher. And I think that might be happening. We're going to see with Wanma Lopez. Is he a guy that's going to box more like a pure, typical southpaw, movement to the right and using his legs and not wanting to get into exchanges? That's going to be very interesting, that as he becomes more effective, should he do this and he loses the entertainment value, will he still maintain his Puerto Rican fan base? Because the whole notion that Mexicans and Puerto Ricans support everybody blindly, that's not true. Because for years when the Marquez brothers, specifically Juan Manuel Marquez, was thought of as a boring counterpuncher, he was not anywhere near popular. And Daniel Santos, as he got knocked out by Kobe Jantua, and especially Hector Camacho post-Edwin Rosario, as those guys started to run from the heat of battle instead of going into the fire, they lost popularity. So it's going to be interesting to see if Wanma becomes more and more of a guy that is not in firefights, can he retain that popularity within his fan base?
Yeah, and you're right. And Camacho, he managed to be still profitable after the Rosario loss, even when his style changed, but only because he was able to play the villain. It wasn't really because he was beloved by the Puerto Rican audience. But I think that's what's going to be interesting, if anything, in the Oliver matchup, is how does he handle this fight? Because you know in Mike Oliver, you have a guy who you could, if you want to carry the fight and get rounds in and work on something we talk about sparring as being a controlled environment. This is close to that, because I don't think Mike Oliver is going to really threaten Wanma in any way. If you want to get rounds in and work on a new style, this would be the place to do it. You mentioned the Marquez brothers, and really that for me is the highlight of the weekend. And when I'm choosing which fight I want to watch live on Saturday, Steve, it's going to be Rafael Marquez and Toshiaki Nishioka. And really, we have two guys who, at this stage in their career, are going to make for exciting fights. I hope they do again on Saturday. But the big question on both sides of the ring is, how much does Marquez have left, and how much does Nishioka have left? Because if this were Marquez's prime against Nishioka's prime, Marquez wins. Neither of them are in their prime right now. So what do these two guys have left is really what we have to find out on Saturday.
Well, Corey, as you just referenced, Marquez is 36 years old, which makes me feel very old. I mean, Corey, when I was a young man coming up in this business, covering fights at Forum Boxing, long-lived Forum Boxing, and Jerry Buss, he was a young kid with his brother. That's how long it's been. And Nishioka is 35 years himself. But I get the sense, okay, and this is just a gut feel from what I've seen, Nishioka has much more in his gas tank. I remember watching Marquez back in July underneath his brother's fight against, who was it, Greg Louganis, Lycar Ramos, who took that dive. Rafael Marquez, coming off that right rotator cuff surgery, looked pretty good for about 3-4 rounds against Eduardo Becerril. And literally, in between, I believe, the fourth and fifth round, it looked like he aged 15 years. And old-time trainers have talked about this, how older fighters will look good, then they get off the stool, and it's a different guy. I remember seeing that Frankie Randall just literally aging in front of our eyes against Khalid Rakhilu in his last fight as a champion back, I believe, in 1996. And Marquez went from a guy that looked pretty sharp that night to a guy that looked underwater, and I said to myself, wow, he just literally went physically backwards right in front of us. Nishioka, I think, is at a pretty high level still. And I remember about 2-3 years ago, he was thought to be the opponent to Johnny Gonzalez, and he just zapped him. And Nishioka still seems to have very good reflexes, in-and-out movement, and I think he has more life in those legs. I'm going to go against my heart here, and I think the man from the land of the rising sun, Nishioka, I think he wins this fight.
Yeah, I'm picking Nishioka as well, and I do that because the notion that Marquez is not shot right now is built on the premise that he was competitive with Juanma Lopez. And we just spent 10 minutes talking about Juanma and his flaws, and those are flaws that a veteran like Marquez, who is still a skilled boxer and still has the know-how in the ring, still throws straight punches and does all those things that you can still rely upon even when your reflexes and your physical tools go away, those things are still able to keep Juanma at bay. Nishioka doesn't make those types of mistakes. And, you know, typically what you see in Japanese fighters, Steve, is that they come in and out and they don't have a lot of variety. I think that Nishioka is a little bit different from your common Japanese fighter in that he is a little bit slippery, and I don't think he's going to give Marquez those blatant opportunities to land punches that he had against Lopez and that maybe he would against other fighters at super bantamweight. I think Nishioka is slippery enough, and you're right, his reflexes are still there, and I think he'll probably be the one keeping a charging Marquez off. And let's see. I mean, I don't think Nishioka is going to knock him out or anything, but I could see at there maybe reaching a point in the fight where we get to a point where Marquez just figures out that he can't do anything, and I think that Nishioka could have that kind of effect on him.
Yeah, Nishioka, as you mentioned, Corey, is not a stationary target, and he defensively, he has good eyes, he has good anticipation, and his reflexes are there, and we also have to talk about the wear and tear. Nishioka is on a 7-year unbeaten run. That says something. His last loss was in 2004 to Seraprom. So that's another lifetime ago, and he hasn't been banged up. And we go through Marquez, who I believe is a borderline Hall of Famer. All you have to do is recall the 3-fight legacy that he leaves against Israel Vasquez. The 4th fight, to me, doesn't count. But they both put each other through the meat grinder, where they beat not only the hell out of each other, Corey, they beat the prime out of each other, because neither guy was ever the same. And you referenced the Lopez fight. I was at that fight ringside. It was a very good fight for about 5-6 rounds. Lopez got buzzed with a big left hook by Marquez, and then Marquez, he blows out a tire in his shoulder. Here's the thing. At that point, just as that fight was hitting that championship second half stage, I thought Juanma was in the process of taking over that fight physically. And I think there's a reason why Rafa said, you know what, this would be a good time to pull the plug. So I said to myself, sitting there ringside at the MGM Grand, I said, you know what, that was a valiant last stand to what's been an outstanding career. I didn't think, again, this guy would make another championship run, but let's put this variable in there because this does matter. He fought that night at 126 pounds. Corey, he's not a featherweight. Simply did not have the size or the strength. But at 22, he is still a formidable physical presence. We'll see how much of a factor that plays on Saturday night.
Yeah, and the other factor, Steve, is that in the past, if we're looking back into his resume, let's not forget that Marquez has looked very normal against very good boxers. Now, I'm not saying that Toshiaki Nishioka is Mark Johnson, but that first Mark Johnson, which I thought Johnson won, Marquez looked like a normal guy. And even in the rematch before the knockout, same thing. And against Tim Austin prior to the knockout, they're sort of fighting on even terms. Now, if we factor in the deterioration of Marquez and the fact that Nishioka is a little bit slippery, I mean, I think it's, I won't say a safe bet, but I'm pretty confident in putting my money on Nishioka on Saturday.
I think Marquez will have some moments early. Because even old fighters, in the first three rounds of any fight, they still have enough juice.
They look like themselves, yeah.
Yes, they do. But what happens is it's like a ball of yarn. Ball of yarn is nice and tight, but as you start to roll it out, it starts to unravel. That's what happens to the old fighters. They don't have 36 minutes in them anymore on particular nights. I think what Nishioka has to do is play it safe, relatively cautious early on, make sure this fight hits rounds 5, 6, and 7, and from that point on, I can't imagine Marquez, if he falls behind early, turning the tide. But again, for a fight that's on Fox Deportes, and you compare it to what HBO's putting on, and this overall card, where by the way, this telecast is 3 hours long, if you get that on your cable system, Fox Deportes, and you also get to see Roman Gonzalez, who I believe is one of the best fighters in the world, below the bantamweight level. In terms of value of dollars to donuts, I think this is one of the very best top-ranked live shows you're ever going
to
see.
Yeah, and one of the few times you'll get to see Chocolatito without, I guess streaming one of the Nicaraguan television stations or something like that. So that's pretty good. I, however, will be streaming this fight because it is not available in Canada. So sorry, Bob and everyone, but I have to steal this from you. Steve, let's get to some news and notes before we get to the hot topics of the week. What do you got?
Couple of things. We mentioned City Salido, the WBO featherweight titleist who we last saw beating up on a Japanese guy in Ciudad Obregon in a hometown defense. I was told by Sean Givens of Zanfor Promotions, his hand issues are still there, but he's seeing a hand specialist. It looks like he's going to fight December 17th once again in a tune-up title defense in his hometown as they embark on hopefully a rematch with Wanma in 2012. Also, Jorge Arce, who we last saw last week, gaining revenge on the South African, he's in town in Las Vegas, Corey. He's meeting with Bob Arum and Todd DeBuff. His immediate wish is he wants to fight November 12th on the Manny Pacquiao undercard, and he would not mind fighting a rematch with another Puerto Rican, Rafael Vasquez Jr., who he beat several months ago in one of the very good fights of the year. Also, one last thing here, November 26th. Originally, HBO thought they were going to do an Adrian Broner-Ricky Burns fight. We knew what happened with that. Burns moved up in weight. So now Adrian Broner has to fight for a vacant title. And I have to be honest with you, Corey, if you're the HBO audience, would you be satisfied with him fighting Will Tomlinson? Probably not. The immediate plan, according to Golden Boy and Eric Gomez, I wrote about this a few days ago, is Saul Alvarez may be shifted to the main event slot in Mexico with Adrian Broner, who's a huge draw in Mexico, leading off that broadcast, Corey.
I'd take LaDainian Tomlinson in celebrity boxing.
He's well-known. He would bring in more ratings than Will Tomlinson. No, I guarantee that.
I could guarantee that as well. A couple things from me, Steve, with a little bit of a Canadian twist. Anthony Descarrie is back in action on October 20th. And he's going to continue that old Quebec tradition of picking on washed-up Mexican fighters. He's going to be taking on Jose Luis Castillo. There's actually going to be a series of Yvonne Michel shows on Thursday nights. Now, that is typically a night when the Montreal Canadiens do not play, so the Bell Center is available. These aren't going to be major cards, but you are going to see some decent name value on there. They're going to be available for free in Quebec and possibly on Canadian pay-per-view outside of Quebec, but there's still deals in the works to possibly bring that for free throughout the rest of Canada. So some positive strides there for a lot of fights that are typically hidden for people in Canada. Sticking in Canada, Phil LaGreco, Pauly Malignaggi's best friend, is going to be stripped of the WBC international title. And who cares, I know, but the interesting part is that he's curiously refusing to fight Victor Lupo, who we last saw upsetting Junior Witter, in his hometown of Toronto. So I guess Phil's just going to keep tweeting. Doesn't seem to have any interest in fighting, even though he could be pretty marketable if he got in there. Get in there, Phil. And last of all, Tyson Fury on November 12th is going to be returning, and it seems to be done that finally he will fight Nevin Pykic. Apparently this time it is done, and it's with a sentimental twist this time. People can disagree over Fury's upside, but they can't disagree that he's a moneymaker and he likes to throw punches. He's going to be putting the two together for this fight and donating $1 for every punch he throws toward the family of Mitchell Wilson, a Toronto boy who took his own life after being bullied. A nice touch there by Tyson Fury. Steve, we're going to come back on the other side. We're going to talk about Andre Ward, the Cotto Margarito undercard. We're going to talk about Hopkins Dawson. Are you going to be buying it? Believe it or not, I might not. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break here on Max Boxing Radio. Welcome back to the home stretch here on Max Boxing Radio. I am Corey Erdman alongside Steve Kim. And Steve, fittingly, the Super 6 has been delayed. The finale of it has been pushed back to December 17th. Andre Ward and Carl Froch still in the same place, still in Atlantic City, just at a later date. And you know what? Something was curious to me amongst the boxing community this week and last week, I guess, when it came out. It was the backlash toward Andre Ward that immediately, and this is not just from the Froch camp, but I guess from his supporters and some of the people who choose to react to everything that goes on in the boxing world, and we love them for that, but the immediate reaction that I saw when it was reported that Andre Ward had suffered a cut in training camp and this had to be pushed back was that Andre Ward must be faking it. How dare he? He must be scared. And it was one of the most absurd reactions I had ever seen for a guy that has been an upstanding athlete, an upstanding citizen, to suggest that he was afraid of Carl Froch at this point or he needed this fight to be pushed back. Where does this come from?
Yeah, well, obviously he is the victim of the cynicism that exists today, because I think boxing fans have been let down by the actions of a lot of people, especially within this tournament, from Mikel Kessler and Andre Durrell, with the mysterious circumstances of their withdrawals. And I think there's frustration within the Super Six. But Andre Ward, I also think, is victimized by the fact that all of his fights have been in California, so it's almost thought of as that he's looking for an angle. But I never believed that, and there was proof. But I will say this, the one thing that made me laugh, and this is Carl Froch just being the salty bastard that he is, and he is who he is, and God love him for it. He called them the SOB, not the yeah. SOG. That's not one of the great lines of the year. But one of the things, like, I discussed this with Ken Hirschman, who basically created the Super Six for the Showtime Network, is that people say that tournaments don't work, and one of the reasons why is all these injuries in the Super Six. Corey, last I checked, even fights that had nothing to do with the tournament round-robin format, they have injuries too, right? They get postponed also. Am I correct?
Yeah, of course they do.
And the Super Six, the one thing you could say about it, whether you think it's too long, whether it's this or that, if you take away the postponements, this thing would have wrapped up months ago. So I'm not so sure how fair that is. Also, look at the roster of fights that we've gotten within this tournament. Kessler Froch, the exposure of Arthur Abraham, the ascension of Andre Ward, Carl Froch, how he's risen. If you take away the tournament aspect of this, you would be saying to yourself, wow, those are some very significant, real, entertaining fights we saw at 68. So to me, some of the criticism of this tournament is illogical. I think it's been good for boxing. I don't know if it's ever going to be done again. I don't know if you could ever bring people together to work in harmony, because let's face it, this didn't really happen here. But I think overall, the Super Six was still very good for boxing.
Yeah, and really, we've had this conversation before about the tournament, Steve. The tournament was there as a vehicle to create these fights. I think that even Ken Hirschman would tell you that they never expected for this to go off flawlessly and without injury and postponement and whatnot, because that is what happens in boxing. Nobody thought this was going to be the March Madness of boxing, and we just get fight after fight, and we just keep rolling them out day after day. That just can't happen. But we got these good fights out of it because of the tournament. And really, after going through all these postponements and whatnot, what are you groaning for at this point? I mean, if you look at the tournament simply as a vehicle to drive these fights forward, we're still getting Carl Froch versus Andre Ward. And really, who cares about that tournament trophy at the end of it or how long we had to wait to see that ceremony? We're getting to decide who is the best super middleweight in the world, whether you think that this fight decides that or whether the winner versus Lucien Boutte decides that. We're making strides toward that. And I think that at times it's nitpicking. I understand that boxing fans and boxing can so often be the theater of disappointment that they've been beaten down and that they will instinctively complain about these things because they have been abused like this before. I get that. But I can't stand for lazy reporting when it comes to stuff like this. You can take a better angle. You can talk about the fights. There are a million other fights happening in the world that you could talk about. You don't have to bring out the headline about how the Super Six gets delayed again and how fitting that is. It's just, Corey, it's tired now.
Corey, the only issue that I've had with the Super Six is the fact that the placement of these fights, specifically the semifinals and the finals, has not maximized its popularity. And I think it's a bad look that when the fights, as we're coming down to the finals, there should be more anticipation, more people in the arena. But because Showtime is an American network and they wanted the semis and the finals in North America, it had to be that way. That's been my only complaint about this. But every other facet of it, to me, I've liked. And a couple of weeks ago, as Golden Boy signed Devin Alexander, Richard Schaefer said to everyone there in Vegas, well, I'd like to do a welterweight round robin, and I'm going to bring it to Showtime and HBO. Here's the problem with that concept. They were all his guys, and a lot of those guys weren't even welterweights. And I said to myself, wait a minute, don't compare this to the Super Six, because the Super Six, theoretically, outside of Lucien Boutte, brought in other promoters and the best super middleweights you could find, for the most part. So, to me, yeah, you can make an argument for tournaments, but I also believe that Top Rank's theory is just make good fights and they'll create other good, significant fights. So you can go both ways about it, but I agree with you. Just harping on cancellations and postponements, to me, it just reeks of piling on, Corey. It really does.
And I tend to like Richard Schaefer, but a tournament like that, if it's within your own promotion, first of all, I know that you don't have the six best welterweights on earth, number one. Number two, they're all your own guys. I mean, if I wanted to see that tournament, I've essentially seen it without a tournament for the past 3 years.
Do you really need to see Paulie Malignaggi and Devin Alexander because they had a Twitter beef, really?
No, that's great if they think they can sell tickets.
If you have that output on HBO, put it on your date. One thing that I don't like about the tournament format, it's one of the pratfalls, is you do end up with fights that you wouldn't make otherwise that you're going to have a hard time selling. That is a legitimate concern of any tournament. Corey, you want to talk about some good news for boxing fans? How excited are you now for December 3rd, now that Wolek and Rodriguez is signed, sealed, and delivered for the Garden?
I was excited just to be going to New York City again to see everyone. And now that I see this card, now that there's Wolek Rodriguez too, Brandon Rios, maybe against John Molina, Cotto Margarito, and Sebastian Lujan versus Mike Jones. I mean, the four TV fights, I can guarantee none of them will be boring. They might end at some point. They might end in unsatisfying ways. But in the time that those guys are in the ring, none of that will be boring. I've been as excited about a full card of boxing in a very long time.
I've got to give Golden Boy and Top Rank credit, even with star power. I know the Matisse-Morales fight didn't happen. You know, stuff happens. And again, guess what, Corey? Matisse was not in the Super Six. Just for all those people out there, I just want to let them know. But I think both companies now are competing with each other positively in a sense that they want to one-up each other. And I don't think there's ever going to be a pay-per-view show as good as Revenge of the Rematches.
No.
1994. That, to me, is the Illmatic of all pay-per-view shows. But recently, both companies, even Dawson Hopkins, has a pretty good undercard, although I think it's 3,000 miles in the wrong direction. But I think it's a great card, and I think part of the thing that we have to do if we have any class, Corey, I want to thank Dan Goosen and Al Heyman, who made this happen. Because basically, when they started doing Enron with the figures, instead of seeing Ramos Rigondo, which to me was my bathroom break that night, or my smoke break if I did that, or my time to go eat dinner, instead of getting that fight, we ended up with Paul Wolak, Delvin Rodriguez, and I find it amazing, and I've asked this of people. Corey, when was the last time you saw a Fight of the Year candidate, which took place that same year, and it ends up on an undercard?
Yeah.
That's how good this card is. And then Brandon Rios, it looks like he could be fighting the rugged Rocky Martinez, so we have another Puerto Rican-Mexican battle. I mean, what an atmosphere and that's going to be, and you got to hand it to Top Rank. They thought about taking it to the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, but Corey, this fight belong at the newly renovated Madison Square Garden. I think it's going to be the night of the year, Corey.
No doubt. No, there's no question. And you're right. The atmosphere combined with the quality of these fights is just going to be amazing. And we're not in the Wamu Theater. We're in the real arena when it comes to December 3rd. Lastly, before we wrap up, the media blitz, so to speak, for Dawson Hopkins, believe it or not.
That's a strong word you're using there, by the way.
Well, that's why I can't create quotation marks vocally, but media blitz.
Oh, you got the two fingers up. Okay.
Yeah, for Dawson Hopkins has been going on. We've got the pay-per-view promos out. The press releases are just finding their way into our inbox twice a day, three times a day. And now the discussion has turned to, will you buy Hopkins Dawson on pay-per-view? And it's a tough situation for a lot of boxing fans because it is big fight season, so to speak. We have a lot of pay-per-views coming up. Cotto Margarito, we were just talking about. You just had Star Power. Pacquiao Marquez is coming up. And, you know, if you say that Mayweather and Pacquiao fights for everybody, including regular sports fans or non-boxing fans, the casual boxing fans, if those are can't-miss events, that's already $120 on your cable bill that you've tacked on this year. It's hard for a lot of people to justify paying money to see Dawson and Hopkins.
Dawson Hopkins is one of the last gifts of the Ross Greenberg administration. The reason why this is on pay-per-view, and people have asked me, the bottom line is that they mangled their budget, they mangled their salary cap like Daniel Snyder of the Redskins, and they ran out of money. And that's why they had to have it here. And then exacerbating that is that I think this is a complete East Coast fight. Now, again, from top to bottom, I like this card. I like Holt Garcia. I like Linares against Antonio DeMarco.
Yeah.
But the overwhelming majority of the fighters on that show are from east of the Mississippi, yet we're at the Staples Center. Corey, if I didn't live literally 5 to 10 minutes from the Staples Center in my Koreatown palace, I wouldn't be going to that show. And would I buy the pay-per-view? You know, Corey, it's our job to watch the fight, so I would have definitely found a way. And in terms of the media quote-unquote blitz, I found it interesting that Chad Dawson canceled his media workout in the Poconos this week, and I tweeted, two media members are very upset, but Gary Shaw's happy because he doesn't have to go there. the thing that I like about Margarito Cotto is it's a natural fight, and there is genuine animosity. Corey, last week, as I went to that press conference, you could feel the heat between the two. They don't like each other. Corey, is it just me, but as it relates to Bernard Hopkins, it's the usual manufactured hatred of his opponent, and Chad Dawson is just passionless to begin with.
Yeah, and you know what? Dawson's probably the one that should have passion. Yeah, in this case, I mean, he was, and whether take this however you want, because I don't think that many fighters are afraid of one another. But Bernard Hopkins didn't want the fight with Chad Dawson for many years. Whether he didn't see it as profitable, didn't think he had to, didn't think he had anything to prove by fighting Chad Dawson. He didn't want to fight Chad Dawson for years, and if you're Chad Dawson, you could be foaming at the mouth in the media right now, but that's just not his temperament.
Here's the thing that is interesting about this promotion is I wonder how many tickets they're going to sell.
Yeah.
I know one of the reasons why this landed at the Staples Center is because we have an NBA lockout, and it cleared up a lot of dates from October until an indefinite time when this NBA season resumes, if it will this season. And you asked earlier, how many people will buy the pay-per-view? You know, I have a feeling it won't do more than 300,000. And that really says something. It really does, because Hopkins is now an iconic figure in a lot of ways. And he's certainly a first ballot unanimous Hall of Fame selection. And here's what I think Bernard Hopkins is. And tell me if you disagree, Corey. He's a guy that if he's on HBO now, you watch him, and he gets pretty good ratings. That's been shown. But all of a sudden, if you say now, you get to watch Bernard Hopkins, but you got to watch it at $59.95, whether you marvel at the skill or are frustrated by it, the things he does aren't necessarily really entertaining. Do you really want to pay $60 for Bernard Hopkins against Chad Dawson?
No, and remember that the goal that Golden Boy was putting out there for Hopkins Jones 2 was $300,000. And as ridiculous as that sounds, considering where they are physically and in their careers right now, do you really think, Steve, that Chad Dawson can definitively sell more pay-per-views than Roy Jones can against Bernard Hopkins? Do you see what I'm saying here?
Here's another factor. I thought a large selling point of this fight, because he gives you great stuff, and he's one of my favorite interviews, was Emmanuel Stewart. I thought Emmanuel Stewart was going to be the mouthpiece for Chad Dawson, because Emmanuel Stewart can hustle. The man can talk, okay? And the man can sell a fight, and he can certainly sell his own fighter. Chad Dawson, to me, he's an introvert, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's a very shy, quiet, soft-spoken individual, but he brings no heat. Emmanuel Stewart is a reporter's dream, and he has a way of at least getting guys like me and you to at least pay attention to something, if not like it. And now Emmanuel Stewart will be there, except it'll be next to, I believe, Larry Merchant and Jim Lampley. I don't know where this fight goes. And here's another issue. If Chad Dawson should put on the performance of his life, I think he has to box. And that's going to be another facet of this. Do you really want to see that? But again, this goes back to a point I've made many times before. Fights like Hopkins and Dawson, we may not necessarily always say, wow, that's a great fight. But on HBO, that's a quality matchup at the very least, if not a great night of entertainment. But one of the problems the sport has to deal with is we cannot oversaturate the pay-per-view market. I think people understand that Mayweather and guys like Pacquiao, we're going to have to pay to see them. And judging by their numbers, they've accepted that. Everyone else, Corey, we better be very careful what we put on the pay-per-view platform.
Yeah, all things considered, Steve, I can't see them doing over 250,000. In fact, I would almost
I'd say closer to 200.
Yeah, I would almost say under 200. Again, if I'm sourcing Hopkins Jones as maybe something that is comparative to this, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if it was under 200, Steve. We've about hit that time where we've got to wrap it up, and hopefully more than 200 people download this podcast. And if you'd like to, you can catch us on Podomatic. You can catch us on maxboxing.com. We're going to put it up there every week for your consumption. Steve, thank you to you as always. We'll catch you guys next time.